Around the country, Year 12 students have been sweating over their final exams. Lots of them will have grown up thinking that if they can get themselves into a university course, they'll be on track to the career of their choice and a full-time job. But my guests have run the numbers, and this really is no longer the case. For the 360,000 students who are currently finishing Year 12 around the country, no matter what path they choose, moving into the workforce is going to be harder for them than it was for their parents. With that in mind, are there choices that young people can make that will give them a leg up after they've maybe had a bit of a post-exam relax, that is, and possibly a gap year? Jan Owen is the CEO of the Foundation for Young Australians, and Andrew Norton is the Higher Education Program Director at the Grattan Institute. Jan, Andrew, hi.
Hello, Amanda. Hello.
Now, Jan, at the Foundation for Young Australians, you've released a report on the new work reality. What does lie ahead for young people leaving school, finishing Year 12 this year?
Well, Amanda, we've spent the last 3 or 4 years deeply researching what the new work order looks like for young people. And in fact, I think we've produced about 6 reports now. So our latest report really looked at what that reality would be for young people. And there's 3 really key themes. Number one is that we know that we're going to a very, very different world of work that's going to be much faster. The pace of change, particularly around automation, is going to speed up. And I think that that really then speaks to a different skill set that we're asking of young people in the workforce. So low-level jobs, entry-level jobs are disappearing fast. Even grads are finding it hard to get those graduate traditional jobs as we're asking for young people to have more experience and more skills. The second core theme is this idea of a much more flexible working world where already young people are piecing together kind of casual work post-school. It kind of sounds great when you call it a portfolio, but I think a portfolio.
Yes, that sounds very smart.
It sounds very sexy, doesn't it? Like I've got a portfolio career, but not everybody wants that. In fact, most young people would like one job, not have to juggle 2 or 3 or 4, but that is fast eluding a generation of young people. And then finally, although we have actually the highest educated group in the history of the country, in fact, 60% of young Australians have got post-school qualifications, which is incredible. So we're highly educated. They are still not able to get at the end of that. We've got 50% of 25-year-olds who are still trying to get full-time work and get on that kind of journey that is the promise of following the playbook, you know, going to school, going to more education, and then kind of getting on with your life.
Well, Andrew Norton, if there's no guarantee that when you finish university these days you'll get a job, does a degree even help anymore? What does a degree mean?
Oh, I think a degree definitely still helps, and outright unemployment is still very low for graduates. But I think we can't really talk at this high level of a degree because different degrees have very different outcomes. And so degrees in the health professions still typically have excellent outcomes, but degrees in arts and science and creative arts, they tend to be much more problematic and provide.
Okay, so I can imagine why in arts and creative arts, but science also.
So this is partly science has traditionally been sort of a middling kind of field, but there's been a massive oversupply of science grads in recent years. And as a result, science is now joining those that are doing quite poorly.
Andrew, there may be people thinking about this generation of young people that they're not getting jobs, not because there aren't jobs out there, but because they're lazy, they're entitled, they're fussy about what work they're willing to take on. Is there any truth in that? I should mention you've just published a report too at the Grattan Institute.
Yeah, look, I don't think that's true of graduates, but, you know, we do have to use backpackers to pick fruit and things like that. So maybe in part of the labour market, that's an issue, but not grads.
Jan, we keep hearing that unemployment is down. So why is it so hard for young people to get a foot in the door?
Well, overall unemployment figures are down, but actually what we do know is that there are pockets of very, very, very significant high youth unemployment. And remember that in the last few years, they were joined by this group called the underemployed. So we now have 650,000, that's 31.5% of young people who are underemployed. It means they have a qualification, they can't get a job in the area for which they've studied and acquire debt and put time and effort in. So that group combined actually costs us something like $15.3 billion lost GDP. So there are pockets of very, very high just unemployment around Australia. Look at some regional areas, look at places like Tasmania, look at areas where there's intergenerational unemployment, and then add to that underemployed young people. And it's a significant number. So I think the overall unemployment number masks actually what's sitting and happening to our young people, which is quite a different story.
Andrew, is it true that also nowadays we, when it comes to higher education or training post-school, we privilege a university degree over more sort of vocational, technical, practical training?
I think we do. And I think this has been going on for decades. So I think it was in the early 90s, we first had surveys showing that a majority of teenagers wanted to go to university, which was well ahead of what was likely then and still ahead of what is true now. And that means that vocational courses particularly have sort of become a bit residualized, the sort of they what you do if you don't get into higher education. And we think that's probably a mistake, particularly for some young men where there are still plenty of good jobs requiring a Certificate 3 apprenticeship kinds of training, which would probably pay more than what they would get if they went to university.
Yeah, all those tradies earning more than, you know, arts graduates.
Certainly more than arts graduates.
Jane, what does your research say about the benefit of university degrees versus other kinds of post-school education?
I think, as Andrew said, it's about this balance, right? So I'm a huge supporter of vocational education training. I think particularly if it can reimagine itself into the future. It's had a kind of a rocky road over the last few years, but if it can reimagine itself to be the things that young people particularly want and also what employers are asking for. So remember that on the demand side, employers are saying a couple of things. Number one, we want young people who have got a kind of a broad skill set. We at FYA have kind of research, this is we've talked about before, this enterprising skill set. So what are the things that are transferable and portable from digital skills to skills in innovation to creativity to problem solving, all the bilingual skills? These skills you can take from job to job and actually you hone and grow them. So one of the things that is quite evident in TAFE is that you get, or generally is you get this hands-on immersive kind of experience and you get an opportunity to actually grow a set of much more portable skills. In fact, interestingly enough, TAFE New South Wales themselves have said this year they've had more graduates who are university graduates coming to their to TAFE to get hands-on.
Okay, so they've done a university degree,
yeah, and then they haven't got the work integrated learning, which is the latest term for it, which is hands-on. So there's something about vocational education which is kind of in time, on time. It's often locationally based as well, so it's where you live, and it's also affordable, and it enables you to go back and come in and out. And one thing we do know about the future of work is that we're going to keep on having to learn. So that dead stop after higher education is going to be kind of just blurred a lot more as employers are saying we need you to upskill or retrain. And there's no doubt that vocational education could be a fantastic place for that to happen.
So, Andrew, what does that mean for universities and what they offer?
Well, universities are moving down this path too. I think there's, in some ways, there is some convergence between the sectors, that vocational education is starting to do more theoretical work, so it's not just about one job you're training for. And higher ed is moving down the path of work integrated learning. So things like nursing and medical have always had this, but now lots of fields are getting into this, realising that unless the student has some experience of the workplace and some experience of putting their skills into practice, it won't sink in, and also the employers won't know from observation that they actually have the skills as their degree says they do.
Janet, as I think you've sort of mentioned, TAFE has for some time had a bit of an image problem, and universities do have a kind of higher status, university degrees. Isn't a big part of the problem that technical and vocational training has been so run down in this country?
I think there's a series of issues. Of course, we did focus in the last couple of decades on university and higher education. which is fine, but we've ended up with oversupply in a number of areas, as Andrew has said. And I think that we should always have had this balance. I mean, other countries have invested heavily, you know, countries like Germany, Canada, other countries really invest very heavily in vocational education. And to Andrew's point, it's almost kind of blurred that you could do a bit of both. And so when we get to a model where I think there's much more porous kind of boundaries between school, by the way, as well as vocational, as well as higher kind of tertiary education, I think when we get to there, we'll have much more choice for young people and therefore potentially much broader skill set.
Mm. Andrew, do you want to add to that?
Yeah, I think that's true. And we have this system which has got historical roots and the funding is separated between the states and the Commonwealth, with the states doing voc ed mainly and the Commonwealth doing higher ed. So we've got these two silos, but that does not neatly match either what individuals are doing in going to both sectors, and it doesn't match what jobs are, which are often a mix of sort of repetitive skills, which you might learn in vocational education, and more abstract thinking, you know, I've not seen this before, how will I deal with it?
Conceptualising. Yeah. Well, as Year 12 exams come to an end for 2018, it'd be good to hear from you too, if there's a high school graduate in your family, how you are thinking about finding the pathway into their career of choice. Why don't you let us know on Facebook? We're at ABC RN Life Matters. Jan Owen from the Foundation for Young Australians. If a university degree isn't the golden ticket anymore, what are the factors that can help young people to stand out, that do help them to stand out, to be attractive to employers?
Mm. So our last report looked at 14,000 young people aged 15 to 25 across the 10-year period. And we analysed really what were the things that enabled them to get to work faster, including the graduates. So there were four really, really strong things. Number one was if you had this broader skill set that you could transfer, so enterprising skills or 21st century skills, you could transfer them from job to job. Number two, if you had 5,000 hours of work integrated learning in some kind, hands-on.
So work experience.
Work experience all the way through to work integrated learning at university. If you had that across the 10 years, that rapidly increased your route to work. If you could find and focus on jobs that were in what we've called in one of our other reports, job clusters. So although some jobs will disappear or change, whether it's in tech or whether it's in social care or whether it's in knowledge transfer, although they will change, actually what we found is that you could enter one of those jobs and you could gain skills that could enable you to move in a cluster. So looking for jobs in a cluster where there's growth in Australia was very, very important. And then finally, sounds crazy, but of course we know this, at 18, and the report was very specific, if at 18 you felt optimistic and kind of resilient, which of course then speaks to everything that happened to you till you were 18. But if you felt that optimism and resilience, you would have a much better pathway as well in transition.
All right. I want to ask you a bit more about the clusters in a minute. But Andrew, we've just had a text from a listener who just wants to know why you said boys need to consider going into a trade. What about girls?
Well, possibly girls should as well. But historically, the kinds of trades that are doing well financially, often around construction and engineering, have very low numbers of females taking up that particular pathway. And what we've seen is that the vocational courses which women do, hairdressing and beauty and things like that, do not typically pay very well. And they don't typically pay more than you would get from a job you got straight out of school. So if you want to maximise your income, this might be a job you prefer, but it's not actually going to increase your income. Whereas in our observation, the guys are actually increasing their income well above year 12 and probably above what they would get if they were down the bottom of the bachelor degree labour market.
So are you saying that there's a sort of gendering in a sense that if you're a woman, you're actually better off doing a university degree in an area that, you know, is going to give you a job as opposed to a TAFE trade type course, unless you're going to go into building or
yes. So
plumbing.
I think that is probably true, right. And that's partly what we're already seeing. You know, yeah. One of the reasons for a gender imbalance at university is that women aren't making these rational decisions.
Right.
I think there's just some nuances in that though. I mean, number one, you can't you know, and this is a very strong story for young women, you don't know what you can't see, you can't be what you can't see. So more women in those those sort of traditional trade areas, I think, and there are some incredible women running businesses in construction and electricians and so on. So I think that's a bit also about what you can't, you know, what you can't see, you can't be. And then finally, I also think that this idea of, you know, one of the things that we've seen a lot of now is entrepreneurship is on the rise, and it could be a response to kind of high unemployment. It could be just this is the way the world is going in this portfolio career. So lots of those people who go into maybe lower skilled or lower paid apprenticeships often go on and run their own businesses, which is a fantastic opportunity as well for women, particularly because it's often flexible, although very grueling, but flexible around their lives. So I think entrepreneurship leading on from some of these maybe lower skilled or lower paid initially is also a good option that we shouldn't close off.
Right. And Andrew, we talked earlier about, you know, a degree, an arts degree really maybe isn't going to train you for a specific job. And that was never the case, I suppose. Although there have, you know, been all sorts of career paths from that. But aren't we now constantly hearing that young people need skills like critical thinking, like managing information, communication, and aren't those precisely the kinds of skills you get from a humanities degree?
You can get them from a humanities degree, but you can get them from lots of other degrees as well. I think that's the crucial point here, that I guess in our research, the power of the disciplines is really evident, that the most striking thing is not whether you're, you know, male or female or even high ATAR or low ATAR, it is what course did you do? And, you know, engineering at the least prestigious university will probably earn you more than arts at the most prestigious university in the country.
Well, Jan, you talked about clusters, the industries that are growing, and that, you know, if you really want to maximise your chances as a young person, choose the right kind of cluster. So what is a cluster? Which clusters are doing the best?
So we looked at 12 million jobs across Australia and looked for them based on not the job titles, but based on skills and capabilities that were embedded in those jobs. And so that led us to seven clusters of work, and the three really core growth clusters are one in technology, which kind of obviously makes sense. The second in information and knowledge transfer, so what we call the informers. So Amanda, you're in the informers cluster. So although your job has changed radically, we absolutely expect it to grow. But as you know, in your industry, you now all have many, many, many more skills. You know, people are, you know, newsreaders and podcasters and digital content creators and. So this is a great example, actually, your profession, which kind of went early. And then we've got the carers, and carers, two things why it makes sense in Australia. Obviously, like what lots of Western countries, we have an ageing population, but also health and well-being, and that ageing population is going to be very, very, very significant. We've got a generation coming through who will not age. They will not go quietly into the night like their parents and their parents. So we expect an absolute explosion of anything around health and well-being. So if you were to even get your first part-time job, even when you're 15 or 16 in one of those three clusters, and start to build that story and start to build that expertise, or change if you don't like that one. But focusing on where the jobs are going to be is really important. You know, lawyers are in the informers cluster, and there's a big story about nobody should do law because we have too many lawyers. I've always said, actually, if you want to do law, seriously do law. The problem solving, the critical thinking, the creativity is intense skills that you gain in law, but just make
sure you might not end up working as a lawyer
in a law firm, but add it with cybersecurity and you're going to be very, very, you're going to do very well. So think about, so I don't want to say to year 12s, don't do the thing that you've always wanted to do, but just think about A, what you marry it with, and two, how you're going to use it. It may not be what you thought. And remember, build the skills and capabilities that underpin that degree as you go.
Andrew, what if you do want to do, say a science degree, but as you said and you've heard, it's not a growing field at the moment. How do you choose then what tertiary study to do?
Well, really, people tend to have clusters of interest, just like there are clusters of jobs. And we've done work looking at the applications people put in for university, and there's lots of cross-preference between science and health and engineering. So it suggests that these are clusters of interests. Mm-hmm. And so within your cluster, you should probably choose a field which you think is going to be relatively safe in the labour market.
And how do you know that?
Well, there's a lot of information out there if you look for it. The government has this website, Quilt, which has graduate employment, and there are much bigger ABS surveys that you can quickly Google to find out this information. But in simple terms, health is very strong, engineering is cyclical but still quite strong, science is weak.
Okay. Well, Andrew and Jan, thank you for that. It's great to have you join us here in Life Matters. Jan Owen is the CEO of the Foundation for Young Australians, and Andrew Norton is the Higher Education Program Director at the Grattan Institute. Thanks to both of you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Amanda.
And links to the latest reports from each of those organisations are on the Life Matters website.